Blog Talk Radio.
You just gonna leave me hanging like that, aren't you?
We can make it if we try.
That's right. It is time once again for the Two Guys Soccer Show. I'm Mike. I've got Stetson singing backup tonight.
That's right. I got my ruffle suit on and everything, man. I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. I always love I love shows like that, the old Motown shows.
Yeah.
You'd have nine guys on stage and one mic.
One mic. Yep.
And they dance
choreography, everything.
And but everybody always came back to the mic.
At the same time. Absolutely.
At the same exact time. You know, you can't beat that.
Nope.
So we are here once again to talk the beautiful game and the week that was. It was a good one. Some good, some bad, some ugly. And we'll have plenty of time to get into it. As always, we are brought to you by Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia's premier place for sports and live entertainment. They'll be hopefully showing the Rugby World Cup.
Yes, sir.
In the next couple of days.
Next couple of days,
yes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Big one leading off. Ireland and Scotland, 3 a.m. Saturday morning. So I don't know where I'm going to find to watch that. I don't know if I'm going to watch it, but it is one heck of a way to kick off the Rugby World Cup.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We are not here necessarily to talk about rugby.
True.
And we all
but
know.
The Rugby World Cup is in Japan, which is pretty cool. And they're kicking off the tournament on Friday at 6:45 in the morning. They're playing Russia. So,
yeah.
You know, it's good to see the game getting outside of the big three nations of New Zealand, Australia, well, big four, South Africa, England, you know, getting out of them and getting into some other parts of the world. Japan's got a great rugby history, too.
It'll be interesting that this year to see if any of the teams from the Northern Hemisphere can
mm-hmm.
make it through to the semifinals.
Yeah.
Last time it was just all Southern Hemisphere teams.
Mm-hmm.
Argentina ended up having a really big World Cup
yeah.
for them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But we'll keep track of that as it happens. So, how was your weekend, brother? I know you had a rough Sunday. You know, Arsenal
I almost just gave up my sporting allegiances on Sunday. I'll just put it that way. That was hard. That was, to say the least. That was not fun.
I know. You know what, though? We got our first piece of fan mail.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Got an email today. Simply said, shut up, dumbasses.
Yep. We'll get right on that. We'll get right on that.
Yeah. I did run into – we also might have had a potential listener. I was talking to a gentleman. We took a cooking class on Saturday. Grilled some rockfish, crab, and corn fritters. It was really good. I was talking to the couple next to us, Haley and Rob, and he's a big Spurs fan, so I was telling him about the show. He listened to about the first 30 seconds of last week's show and pronounced that we sucked and he would never listen to us again.
Oh, nice guy.
Really was a nice guy.
Oh, well.
Enjoyed chatting with him.
Yeah.
So, and... another update from Solicitor Oliver Banks. He wants us to come over to the sport of arbitration for the Court of Arbitration for Sports. Apparently, we suck so bad that we're going to an international level to try and get us banned.
Ah, so we have to face the tribunal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Understood. Understood.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well,
we'll be prepared.
Yeah. Let's try to see what we can do.
So, what did you think about this weekend? It was an interesting one. I think that we both have to start in pretty much the same place, which would be the good, which definitely has to be Norwich and Norwich City and over Man City.
Mm-hmm.
And full credit to Daniel Farke for taking an injury-depleted Norwich City team that was so ravaged by injury, they had to name two goalkeepers just to round out the bench. And not being afraid.
First-team center back actually available to play.
Yeah, and not being able, not being afraid to go at Man City with that frenetic pressing game that they like to play. And pulling off what probably would be the biggest upset of the season.
Yeah.
Taking out the defending champs at Carrow Road. I did not see that one coming. I'm not sure that Manchester City saw that one coming.
No. I get the sense that, but you know, when you look at Norwich City, though, they've been able to put the ball in the net with some regularity this season. Now, they've also been scored upon a bunch, but it's good to see them playing like a team should play when you're newly promoted, especially a team that has been in the Premier League recently and has won, you know, they've won some games, but what's great to see, though, is, you know, they're scoring every game. You know, they're putting in, they even got one against Liverpool. You know, they got three over Newcastle. They put in two against Chelsea. And then they had a little bit of a skid with the League Cup game and their game against West Ham, but they dropped two. But then they put in three against Norwich City. So this team isn't playing afraid. They're not, you know, farking the bus, I'd say, in front of the goal. They're actually playing counters. They're attempting to win possession, and they're bodying up a lot of the other team. They're not playing afraid. And it's exciting to watch, and you're happy for them, and they're getting a lot of support from teams and from fans who are a little unfamiliar. I could see them being a team where a new soccer fan's coming and says, oh, which team am I going to just kind of follow a little bit, and have them be – they can become somebody's Bournemouth, because that's what happened when Bournemouth came up with me. So I'm happy for them. It's good to see the coach just working with what he's got and saying, look, guys, go out there and have fun, because they definitely are having fun out there. You got to say, too, after Todd Cantwell's goal, he had one of the best goal dances I've seen in a long time. Did you happen to catch that?
Yeah, that was a pretty good one.
That's pretty good.
I'm not sure what it was.
I'm not either.
But it was good.
It's like maybe he'd been hanging out in Ghana a little bit or something. I don't know, because it was reminiscent of what you know, like Suleiman Tari and them used to do after they'd score a goal.
But, yeah.
It was pretty cool.
I've noticed, though, that the big criticism with them after the Liverpool game was that if they were going to play that pressing, gegenpress type of style that he brought with him from Borussia Dortmund, that they were going to get torn apart. And you saw how open they left themselves against Liverpool. What I noticed in the Man City game was that they were still doing the same thing. They were still pressing up the pitch. They were still looking to get the ball. They were still capitalizing on the speed and the width provided by their fullbacks when they were counterattacking. But they were doing it a little bit further back down the pitch. They were starting off about 10 yards further back than they were against Liverpool. And as a result, they were able to, you know, cut the lines of service more effectively to Manchester City's attack. And they were in a better position when they did win the ball to counterattack. You know, now, we do have to say, you know, again, I think that their Manchester City's defense looked a little bit frail. And you could see that they were really missing Aymeric Laporte, who's out with the knee. And for all of Vincent Kompany's I guess, lack of speed at this point in his career. I don't know if they've really found anybody there, you know, to replace him. John Stones does not necessarily look as comfortable in that system as we thought he would be.
Mm-hmm.
Nicholas Otamendi, you know, is or that pairing just doesn't inspire a lot of confidence.
Right.
And I was surprised at how many goals when I was looking up that they that Man City has conceded from set
mm-hmm.
pieces.
Yeah.
Over the course of this, you know, they hadn't lost since January of last year, but they've conceded 17% more goals. One stat that I was reading, they've conceded 17% more goals than from set pieces than anybody else.
Mm.
And it seems like, and you could see, you know, when you've got smaller players, like they tend to recruit at Man City, that they could be vulnerable there
mm-hmm. right.
in those positions.
Right. Yeah. When you're looking at a team too, that is, they play the ball out of the back often. They're looking for more talented players when it comes to ball at the feet, control, quick passes, and everything like that. Those players, due to physics and physiology, tend to be a bit smaller as well. They're going to be a little shorter. You're not going to get a 6'5 center half that's going to be as adept at doing that as a player who may be a little bit shorter. So that could be a situation where when you have set pieces against you, where the ball's often coming from an aerial position, could pose an additional challenge. And you're right. Stones has not looked comfortable really yet since he got there, which is a little surprising. I was expecting by this time he would be a bit more comfortable. I say that too. You got to take that with a grain of salt because they still won the title last year. But it just seems like he's not the he's not England's savior of center halves that they've needed for quite a while. You know, he's not the next Rio Ferdinand. So I don't really know. I don't really know what's going to take for him to finally start to kind of like find his place there. And yeah, I know he's been injured a bit recently too. So, you know, and he's young and I do think he's a solid, solid defender but he was one that was thought of to be a bit more skilled. Am I right? I remember when he was transferring, it was like, well, he's so good with the ball at his feet. He's very good at control. He's very good at working the ball forward and feeding to his midfielders and to his strikers. So he should have fit pretty naturally just from what the scouting report that was, of course, that was told to the lay fan like me.
I would agree with that
mm-hmm.
he should have fit more naturally, but you know, he was a young player
mm-hmm.
and again, how many times have we seen it with young players who make these big moves?
Mm-hmm.
For every Raheem Sterling who does it when they're in their early 20s, you have a
mm-hmm.
player like a John Stones who struggles to fit in
mm-hmm.
and probably might be better served going someplace else, even though we know he's not going to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you got to think, too, with Sterling coming from Liverpool versus coming from Everton. And Everton is you know, they're not on the level of Liverpool.
No. And certainly you could make the point that it was a bit of a weakened Manchester City side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, De Bruyne comes in off the bench. Jesus doesn't start. Mahrez doesn't start. You know, you got Bernardo Silva. Okay, Gundogan in there. Fernandinho's not in there.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like a case of getting out of the international break and trying to get through this game with the least amount possible.
Right.
I wouldn't say that they were looking past the game because I'm sure that both Pep and team are aware that, you know, Liverpool won earlier
mm-hmm.
today
mm-hmm.
and that they needed to win to keep pace.
Mm-hmm.
And it wouldn't have been like, oh, we're focused on Shakhtar Donetsk. I know they knew that they needed to go out and play that game.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder if, you know, they took it a little bit lightly in the setup, and then they're so, you know, Pep's one of those ones, he's always going to be convinced that his system works
mm-hmm.
no matter what happens. There is no
mm-hmm.
plan B. It's
mm-hmm.
just execute plan A better. And
mm-hmm.
even late in the game when they're down 3-2, still thinking, okay, we've got to play Man City football. You
mm-hmm.
know, I you know, bringing De Bruyne off the bench, he's not exactly done a lot as a sub. He's a guy who kind of needs to start because it takes him a while to get into the rhythm of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not reading the game on the bench the way that he might need to. You know, he's got to figure out how's the ball rolling, how's the grass, how's the pitch,
right.
how's all
right.
that sort of stuff, so he can
right.
do what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes a little bit of time. When you bring him in the 60th, 70th minute, he doesn't have that time.
Right.
And it's not a slight on De Bruyne. Like, it's hard to be a sub.
It is, especially when you're not coming in as a sub to either just be a lockdown defender or just try to hammer the ball in the net. When you're coming in to be a game manager like De Bruyne is, yeah, that is definitely difficult to come in and not only to figure out the things you were discussing, but also try to monitor the tendencies of the players who are opposing you, which he does awfully well. And you see why he makes such tremendous plays in like the middle of the second half as the game is developed.
He's definitely a facilitator. He's a guy, I liken him a little bit to a Johnny Unitas type player. He's a quarterback, but
mm-hmm.
he's going to read the game. He's going to see what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe the first two times doesn't work. But
mm-hmm.
as he sees what your tendencies are, that's when he's going to get you.
Mm-hmm.
But you get them a lot as the game goes on, and it takes time for him to be able to read this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I do think though I think it's a bump in the road, and I think it's more of instead of this being a bad story for Manchester City, I think this is more of just a good story for Norwich. They've been in the bottom three. They've been toiling around trying to just get something going, and you discussed the injuries that they've been having. So it's nice that they got a win. You know, bumped them up to 13th place. You're sitting on 6 points. You know. But, you know, they've scored 9 goals, and they, you know, they're not drawing, which is kind of exciting, too. They're always seem to be, you know, going at it in games. So I think it's more of just – as opposed to kind of looking at this as, okay, now you're 5 points down after 5 games, but look at it and say, good on you, Norwich City. You had probably the most difficult team to come into your house, and you were able to get 3 points out of it. So congratulations, and they should really be patting themselves on the back for this one.
Yeah, they should. And I think that's the story. You give credit where
mm-hmm.
credit is due. And certainly, hopefully, you know, people are going to look at Daniel Farke, who came over. You know, he was the coach at Borussia Dortmund, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He learned under Klopp. He came here because he wanted a shot to take his own team.
Mm-hmm.
And he guided them from mid-table championship to automatic promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's probably pulled the biggest scout that he's going to get while he's
mm-hmm.
Norwich City manager. It's certainly
mm-hmm.
one that's going to make people notice. Now,
yeah,
it is very, very easy for it to all go pear-shaped. You know, he's the darling of the media right now. He loves
mm-hmm.
him. I can't tell you how many people or how many articles you can read where it's like, hire him, manager.
Yeah,
you should take
he's
over.
He's trending.
Him.
He's trending all over the place right now. Absolutely.
You know. Depending on what happens, you could certainly see him moving there at some point in time, hopefully on his own terms.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all know when you're down at the bottom of that league, how quickly it can all go bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, and you also hope, too, that you see teams in the lower leagues will also – they're not above selling managers.
No.
You know? Yeah.
But I'm just worried about him becoming another version of David Wagner from
mm-hmm.
Huddersfield. Remember when Huddersfield was playing
yes.
their first couple of games and he
mm-hmm.
was on everybody's mind?
Right.
And, you know, he didn't even make it all the way through his second season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hopefully he continues – they seem like they're going to back him. They seem like they're happy he's doing a good job. The players like playing for him. He seems to be a good interview. He also is the manager in the Premier League who most resembles a villain from Die Hard.
Especially with that haircut, you know?
Yeah, but did you see, like, when he was shaking, they have a still of him shaking Pep Guardiola's hand, and he has this straight maniacal look on his face?
Absolutely. It looks like he's like, I'm going to rip your spine out and show it to you before you die.
It's like, I am going, do you know what I have planned for you? He looks crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, he looks like he needs to, like, forget Manager Football and Die Hard 19 featuring the CGI version of Bruce Willis. He's going to come back as one of the villains. Like, I promise you, he looks like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely, he does. He totally does. Totally does. He looks like, too, he doesn't look like a former player. He looks like a guy who had won too many boxing matches.
Yes.
Maybe some bare-knuckle fights in there. That's what he looks like.
But, you know, it is funny that you say he doesn't look like a former player. Of course he is. You know, he played most of the lower leagues.
Yeah.
I was talking
which tend to turn out good managers.
Mm-hmm. And I have a theory about this, and it kind of relates to, you know, native speakers trying to teach somebody a language. They don't understand the problems that you have learning a new language.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who play their whole career and who are stars don't necessarily always understand how to teach somebody certain skills that they never really struggled to develop.
Right. Right. It's the common misconception where, you know, everybody, you know, you get your Larry Bird every now and then who turns out to be a good coach, but is not necessarily a strong, who was a good player and a good coach, when normally, you know, that really doesn't happen. I mean, take Isaiah Thomas, you know.
I'm trying to go back through my memory, but, you know, there aren't a lot of Johan Cruyffs out there who were all world as both players, but then not only that, can come in and build and manage a team just as effectively. You know, Pep was a really good player, and he was a solid midfielder. And yes, he was the captain of Barcelona on a team that won the Champions League, and Cruyff chose him to be captain and basically handed him the reins to the team, and he was bought up and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily ever look at him as like the star of that team.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And being a player too, where you are used to not only not being the one in the spotlight and being the one, I mean, Pep, I believe Pep was a defender. So you're used to
he was a midfielder.
Okay. But he was a defensive, I'm pretty sure he was a defensive midfielder.
Yes. Yes.
So he's used to managing the field, being a quarterback, like you said, and, but also thinking of being a player who was not the most skilled, but was able to play at a level that maybe even exceeded their athletic talents due to their ability to adapt and due to their ability to learn. So, and those seem to be the players that make the best coaches. I mean, the best is hearing Jurgen Klopp talk about his last couple of seasons playing in Germany and how he said, look, if you want still me to you still want me to be a part of this team in any way, you got to make me the manager, because clearly me on the field is nothing more than a liability.
Yeah. And it's actually, I'm going to use that as a segue to go to my bad for the week. And my bad this week, it has not gone well for another Manchester City player turned manager and Vincent Kompany. We always talk about how we want to, you know, we focus heavily on the Premier League and the top leagues because they're the most watched, right?
Of course.
I want to focus a little bit on, and this week I made a conscious effort to try and focus on some other leagues. And one of the stories that I was rummaging around through that somebody brought to my attention was just how bad a start they've gotten off to at Anderlecht. It has not gone well for Kompany, who's injured right now. Technically, he's the player manager, but Simon Davis is the head coach. And Kompany can't really manage the team because he doesn't have his licenses yet. But so far, from their first seven games, they've got one win. And they're sitting in 13th place right now. And they lost yet again. Now, this weekend, their one win was against Standard Liège, who currently lead the league. But they lost yesterday 2-1 to Antwerp. And it just has not gone well. In fact, the company who was brought in to be the player manager has sort of said that he will relinquish the manager's role on game days. So Simon Davis now does all the substitutions and tactics, which I think is probably one of the more important parts of being a manager, especially on game day. And he will focus on being the captain, a job that he took from Samir Nasri, his former teammate. And he's trying to play that sort of Man City possession-based tiki-taka style that he learned from Pep Guardiola, but it's just not working. And Davis was saying, you know, it's all right to play with the ball at your feet and play really beautiful football, but sometimes you just got to do some Route 1 stuff and play it long. And we've seen what has happened in the past. The teams, when they try and convert to this possession-based style where they don't necessarily quite have to play. I'm thinking most notably about Peter Bosz's failed tenure at Crystal Palace and how awful that went. Not Peter Bosz, Frank de Boer. Frank de Boer after he got sacked because they couldn't score a goal and they were just leaking them.
Right, when they went 0-7 or something like that with no goal scored. Yeah, that was. But the playing out the back seems to be all the rage now, all the rage. Yet there's no substitution for just getting the ball out of the zone. There's no substitution for that. And it's, you know, we were talking about this last week with the U.S. soccer, and, you know, it's good to be pushing your teams in that area and everything like that. But is it wise to abandon what it is that's helped you be successful up to that point simply because you think you need to get on the bandwagon for the wave of the future? And, you know, I'm not going to move to my good or bad yet because it's part of it, but you know, is it just me or are we seeing an increase in mistakes in the defensive third, which has led to a lot more easy goals for opposing teams?
I remember when Jose Mourinho managed Manchester United against Ajax, and everybody said that they were really going to struggle with Ajax's possession base and all the passing and the build-up moves and the long runs that they would make with the ball. Mm-hmm. And what Mourinho did in that particular game in that Europa League final was basically just every time they got the ball back, hoof it downfield and make them build from the back again. He's like, you can pass it all you want in your defensive third, but every time we get it, we're just going to make you reset. And then when he beat Liverpool, he just loaded up the midfield and basically cut service between the defense and the attack. And you've got to have the right players to do it. You've got to be able to have the right positioning. And not a lot of teams have everybody that they need to do it. It's much easier to do it at club level when you can get the right players to do it.
Right.
You know, but, you know, we've really only seen Barcelona with Messi, Xavi, and Iniesta do it to full effect and do it effectively. You know, none of these teams that talk about playing it out of the back like that continuously, you know, how many Champions Leagues have they won?
One.
I mean, Barcelona, that's it.
Barcelona, that's it, yeah. Because I'm like, no, you know, Real Madrid doesn't do that, you know.
Real Madrid is a counterattacking team.
Right.
You know, Bayern Munich certainly could hold possession, but they were an attacking team. They just, when they attacked, they did it with pace. you know, and pace and purpose. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just hold the ball and build from the back and sort of overwhelm the way that they do. Even, you know, Man City, despite all the domestic success that they've had, we've seen where that has caught them later on in Europe.
Right, because I don't think they've ever even finaled in Europe.
No.
Hmm.
No.
And you know, I just hate to see, you know, whatever happened to the good old fashioned goal kick, where you're playing the ball to your midfield, you're playing the ball to a spot where you can actually turn and try and create some possession that way, instead of this, because you know. It seems like teams are doing the high pressing line, and which led to more play out of the back, which seems kind of opposite to me. But of course, I'm just talking as a fan who seems who may have his order of events easily crossed. But it appears that if you're having teams that are repeatedly putting two and three players up into the box during goal kicks, maybe you should just start playing the ball over them to your midfielder, so at least you only have eight guys behind you instead of all 11. But, you know, tactically, I don't really get it beyond the top teams who have defenders that are skilled to do that type of motion or who have some sort of setup in mind. I'm thinking like breaking the press in basketball. You can't just give it to your fastest guy and hope that they can just outrun everybody.
I think one of the reasons why, though, is the percentages on long balls are low.
Are low. Yeah, maintaining possession is low. That's true. But if you're being outmatched and the other team is repeatedly having shots on your goal, I think you should find something else.
It's a chance to sort of play a higher percentage sort of play. The short pass is always going to be a higher percentage than the long one. The problem is if you are not quick enough in making those short passes, and it's basically the motion offense. You've got to continuously be moving and making yourself available for the ball and then 1-2 touch stuff, getting it forward.
Mm-hmm.
When it works, it's beautiful. When it works, it's effective.
Absolutely. Agreed.
But when it doesn't, you end up just leaving yourself wide open to presses and easy opportunities. And apparently it's just not working right now in Antwerp. And I'm going to be interested to see, you know, again, company's out injured right now, so he's not playing. If in the next couple of weeks you see them actually bring in a manager, it's hard to fathom going doing this player manager thing. And I understand the allure for Antwerp of bringing Vincent Kompany back in the marketing aspect and giving him that opportunity. But it just doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And it's got you wondering what's going to happen when Rooney goes over to Derby in January, is if he's going to be facing the same challenges that you're seeing right now with the company.
I think the difference with Rooney is that Rooney's not going to be the manager.
No.
He's going to be on the coaching staff.
I think
his goal is going to be to learn how to manage a team and learn from the team. It's going to be interesting is Rooney as a coach, a player who, while skilled, has never really been renowned for his training regimen and work ethic. And how that aspect of it is going to work out.
Yeah, you got to wonder. I'm like, all right, we'll see.
But again, I think this is more of a off the field maneuver than it is for any qualities that may come on it. So one more lower league or different league, other league. I shouldn't say lower league story. My other good for this week was going to be the opposite of what was going on in Antwerp, and it comes from Brazil, the former coach of Benfica, Jorge Jesus, has taken over Flamengo, who are one of the big, you know, they play in the Maracanã. They're probably arguably the biggest team
in Brazil.
In Brazil, but one that has not been particularly successful. No. Their last league title was over a decade ago. They haven't won the Libertadores since 1981. And he has come in, and he came in during the Copa America break.
Right.
He's come in, he's got him into the semifinals of the Libertadores, where they'll play Gremio. It's actually weird. You've got in the Libertadores semis, you've got an all-Argentina semifinal and an all-Brazil semifinal.
Interesting.
You've got Boca Juniors and River Plate in one semi, and Gremio and Flamengo in the other. So you're going to have a Brazil-Argentina final one way or the other. But Flamengo is up.
That's
at the top
probably for the best after what happened last year for that cup.
Yeah.
Let's just make sure that it's not going to be what we can't do what we did last year.
And so he's come in, and you know, I wouldn't say that anything he's done is revolutionary as much as he's kind of interjected a more European style of training and tactics. Mm-hmm. And what he said is, you know, there's a heavy emphasis on skill, but he's added some tactics to it. And Brazilian soccer is notoriously conservative when it comes to the league.
Right.
And they're just kind of running away with stuff up there. He hasn't lost a game in the league since August. And they're sitting in the Brazilian league. He hasn't lost since August, and they're sitting three clear of Palmeiras at the top of the table halfway through the season.
And you know, the funniest thing too is that as I was reading about how he's like, what is he actually doing? And he was talking about how notoriously conservative the Brazilian coaches for the Brazilian league system are, and how I find it a little odd how the national team plays versus how the club league, the club teams are playing, because, you know, he happened to tell his defense to pull up. Like, that's not something that they do. And by doing that, you're limiting the opposing player's offense the opportunity to do their beautiful game, to do their trickery, to do the fancy stuff that seems to be what makes Brazilian football Brazilian football. But again, it's not effective to simply. I mean, the coaches were, at least this is from what I heard, is how coaches were telling their defense, no, stay back. You know, the offsides almost doesn't even exist in Brazil because defenders don't pull up. But by cutting that space off, which is what, you know, that was a tactic that we did when I was in high school, has caused this new kind of, like, I don't want to say new way, because, you know, they're aware of it. It's just not something that they want you to do because it may limit the ability of the teams to look pretty.
Well, it may limit the ability to the teams to look pretty. But the other thing is, if you have your defense back, you know, you are guaranteed that you have somebody between the player and the goal. And it's just a conservative approach to prevent, almost like parking the bus.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to say, though, like, when was the last time you recall Brazil really being Brazil as a national team?
Oh, wow. Let's see. I believe Roberto Carlos was still on the squad, I would say.
You know, I can remember, like, 2002, 2006.
Yeah.
Where there were a couple of times where you saw the flair and the step overs and the sort of that samba rhythm that they used to play the game.
Yeah, you know, when they had the Nike commercials. Yeah. Everybody knows they had the best Nike commercials. They made you want to go play just watching those commercials. They had the one where they were playing the keep away game against Portugal. They got the one where they were playing soccer in the airport. They got the one where they're riding the bus and the dress in the dressing room and they're flicking shoes.
That was
at
a great one. With the Black Eyed Peas song. I love commercial.
Yeah, the Ronaldinho commercials, and then they had the Romario commercials, and they had the Ronaldo commercials. Those are the best.
I mean, I remember seeing them in a friendly against the U.S. where they did that a couple of times. And they, you know, it was like, I want to say it might have been either Robinho or Ronaldinho took the ball down to the corner flag, and he did some, you know, some fancy footwork and tricks and got the oohs and ahs. But I really have not seen them do that sort of stuff for a generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that would be a generation of players. Yeah, definitely.
And I think that is part of the reason is because of how these young guys are playing in Brazil right now. They're being coached more conservatively. Mm-hmm. You know, they're taking that very static, staid sort of mentality into these games. And, you know, that's why I feel like they haven't necessarily, that domestic league hasn't had much success in the South American Championships, because mm-hmm. the other teams are doing different stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's nice to see the players on that team. You know, there's some names that you're certainly familiar with. Felipe Luiz is over
mm-hmm.
there. The,
mm-hmm.
Gabriel Barbosa,
mm-hmm.
who had that fantastic Olympics, has been knocking
mm-hmm.
in the goals on loan
mm-hmm.
from Inter Milan.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually be very, 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 very surprised if he goes back to Inter. I think, like, that experiment is done.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know if there's a way for them being Flamengo to actually afford him unless he leaves on a free.
Right.
So I'm wondering if it's going to be one of those things where he stays in Brazil until his contract runs out, which should be, like, next year,
mm-hmm.
and then even on a free to go back to Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I, you know, you see the young guys come to Europe from Brazil, but you don't really see them come back once they've gone. If they go back over to Brazil, you never really see them come back.
Right. 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 So once they and come back, they kind of stay in.
Yeah.
In
it's
Brazil.
Like you got your shot. It didn't work for you.
Didn't work.
You're back over here. Guess what? This is where you're going to stay.
Yeah, and you'll be fine. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a fine league. I mean, and that league has, at least from the standpoint of being able to pay their players, has made tremendous strides in the last 20 years. So, you know, staying in Brazil is not necessarily a stunt to your career anymore. I mean, you're not going to make, of course, you know, Europe money of tens of millions of dollars, but you can make a couple mil playing down in Brazil and have a great career.
Yeah, there's a lot of third-party ownership over there, which is how they get those guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a big issue. But, it's you know, Brazil, there's third-party ownership for players in Portugal, too. So
yeah, right.
I think that's another thing that makes getting transfers done a little bit hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Gabigol's been knocking them in for Flamengo all season. So it's going to be interesting to see when the couple of Libertadores semifinals come up in early October, right before
mm-hmm.
the international break. So, well, that was my little speech for the week. What do you got on your mind so far?
Well, I want to start with something positive, and this is a very quick positive, but, you know, something that just caught my eye as I was flipping through, because I went ahead and bit the bullet and got BeIN Sports so I could catch the last couple of years of Lionel Messi before he does eventually retire. But I was struck by their young budding superstar, Ansu Fati. And he is 16 years old, forward, looks all of 16. He's got a baby face and everything. And he has been he was signed with Barcelona from Sevilla from a pretty early age. But he actually never played a Barcelona B game, which is pretty cool. He had a youth career from there since 2012, and he was supposed to be on Barcelona's B squad this season, and basically got called up to the A squad, and then scored 2 goals in 3 games and an assist. And he's Barcelona's youngest goal scorer. He's Barcelona's youngest, and he's La Liga's youngest player to have a goal and an assist in a game, which he did in the first 7 minutes of the game over the weekend against the Valencia. So I went ahead and started digging. I was like, well, who is this guy? And so he's from Guinea-Bissau. And his father was a player, and he tried to make a couple of teams in Europe and really was unsuccessful in that area. And his father was homeless for a while and was just trying to scrape by, trying to figure out a way to get his family up into Portugal or Spain, and was able to settle in a town near Sevilla, or, you know, Seville. And so he was able to bring his son up, his kids. And, you know, this was, his son came up when he was six. And that was the first time he actually ever met him. And playing ball on the streets with, you know, Twine and Sox and Sevilla Psalm, and signed to their youth team nearly immediately. And then he's up in Barcelona. And the reason why this is kind of striking to me is because he has international ties to not only his country of birth, but also Portugal, who is interested in calling him up to theirs because they want to tempt him into getting a Portuguese passport because of his time that he spent his father there, and the fact that Guinea-Bissau is a Portuguese-speaking country. So, so because of that, it's in a former Portuguese colony, it's quite easy to make that transition from a Portuguese-speaking colony just to go to Portugal. I mean, you know, you're thinking of the number of players of African descent that are from Portuguese colonies that end up emigrating to Portugal as young children who end up playing for the Portuguese team. That's, it's quite often you see Portugal, and several of their players are black. But he wants to play for Spain. He feels Spanish. He feels like he's from Sevilla, and that he's, and that, that he's played all his whole career there. And Spain is very, 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 very interested in getting him his passport as quickly as possible so they can call him up. They have the under, I believe it's the under 21 World Cup, I think, is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Spain is talking about trying to get him on, and Barcelona doesn't want him to go. They're like, no, we want him here. We want him here at the club. And, but I can't recall Spain having an African superstar that plays, excuse me, that plays for their national team. They've had plenty that have played in the league. I mean, of course, the most recent one you can think of who is not currently, but, you know, a big popular one is Samuel Eto'o, who had his fair share of struggles playing in Spain with you know, things we've been discussing with a lot of the racism that has occurred on the field, and a lot of the chants, and a lot of the bullying that's occurring of these players from fans. So it would be interesting to see is that what if this kid does blossom into something special, and all of a sudden he's starting for the Spanish national team with the name of Ansu Fati. That would be very interesting. Be very interesting to see what that does to that league. I mean, we can recall when I forgot the coach's name, but he was calling players. I believe he was calling Thierry Henry a black SHIT. You know, so he
yeah.
And now, all of a, you know, not now all of a sudden, but now you're looking 20 years later, and you have potentially at having this kid be one of your best players and actually represent your national team and probably start games. Pretty exciting times. And I'm hoping the hype doesn't overwhelm him. And I'm hoping that the hype doesn't get too far into the media that's in Spain, and he's still able to develop. But what he's doing so far is impressive. And I'm glad Barcelona took him out the game though at the 60 minute mark. They went and took him out. You know, I'm glad they're doing that. I'm hoping that they don't try to put too much on him too quickly, because he's still, I mean, he's very young. So, you know, you're looking at a guy that was born in 2002. I mean, I was already a working adult by then. It's pretty crazy.
It's something. No, he looks like a good young player. The manager you're thinking of is Vincente Del Bosque.
Yes. Del Bosque, that's right, yes.
I know that Spain has had a black player before. I'm trying to look up his name right now.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot who he was, but he definitely started for them in the World Cup, I think.
Yeah, but I believe he was Brazilian.
Okay.
Yeah. I know if it's the same guy I'm thinking of, I could probably find his name, but yeah, but he was definitely Brazilian.
Yeah, and maybe I have to even go back to 2008.
Yeah, Marco Senna.
Right.
Marco Senna. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Was exactly who I was thinking of, but he was Brazilian.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No, it'll be interesting to see, but I feel like as long as he's playing for Spain, it won't be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's more the, but again, you know, we see that in Italy. There's no such thing as a black Italian.
Right. Right. Until they semifinal in the Euro off of Balotelli's goals.
Or until Moise Keane helps them win a World Cup.
Exactly. Today. Exactly.
Then everybody's going to be his favorite. Mm. But and we saw that with France under, I think it was Dominic, had the policy where you had to have 7 white French players,
yes,
7 African players, and 7 North African players.
Yes. He said setting quotas. Because I believe it was after the 2002 World Cup where France was defending champions, and they had a very, very, very like heavily African team, and that was bounced immediately after the World Cup.
Yeah, and then you see what happens when they go back to the heavily African team this time.
They win. Yeah, they win. So,
I'm impressed with the kid. I think the thing with, you know, he's so incredibly young.
Yeah.
And it's clear that he's a very talented player.
Yes.
And Barcelona has actually strangely had a bit of a youth problem in recent years.
Mm-hmm.
The number of players that are coming through La Masia is not high. Like, I think he might be the first, he's got to be the first youth player in a while to come through the academy, but he didn't actually come through the academy. He came through Sevilla. So even then, it doesn't really work.
Right.
But that's a team it's aging.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a relative, so they need that. I was struck by how quickly and how willing they were to get rid of Ousmane Dembele and the potential Neymar deal.
Yeah, I agree.
And I'm thinking, you know, you have to keep these guys and develop these guys. He seems to get on it, and you saw how warmly Messi greeted him.
Absolutely.
After his first match with Barcelona, his first appearance when he became their youngest player.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to get on with the guys, so I don't think that it's going to be like, oh, well, we can use him to get somebody else, which is what they've tried to do recently, to bring in, because there's such a win now mentality to take advantage of, you know, how many years do you have left of Messi?
Messi and Suarez, yeah.
And with them being injured, you know, he's been an integral part of keeping that team humming.
Yeah, and I'm trying to see. You know, he hasn't made any decisions he hasn't had a first team game yet with anybody on the international level. And I'm just looking at their squad, and you know, he's currently listed as a Guinea-Bissau player, which of course, because he's yet to receive his passport. But we'll see what, because you know, Barcelona doesn't carry a lot of players, you know. You don't see them with this Barcelona B or the youth academy that's got 40 players, and then they have an additional 20 to 30 players out on loan. Where you know, you see like the other big clubs that do, you know, Chelsea's one, Juventus is one, where they have just a ton of players out on loan, and their first team is relatively small.
They have the B squad.
Yeah, but even the B squad isn't necessarily all that large. The B squad is not, it's not that big. I'm just saying that they just don't seem to carry the same number of players, which alludes to your point about there. Maybe there is a little bit of a youth problem there. So, and with these players aging, you're hoping that they don't use him as a player that can bring in, that they can use to lure more first team players necessarily when they definitely have somebody that they should probably try and grow a bit more.
Yeah. So before we move on, I want to make sure we give a shout out to our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. We'll be down there this weekend for the Premier League matches. Of course, there's a big Sunday because you've got both Celtic and Manchester United both playing on Sunday because of the Europa League, which is starting up. And we'll have to talk about Europe in a little bit. So best place to go and watch a game. They got the 100-inch big screen, always got specials. So come down and join us. Playing against Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland's premier venue for sports and live entertainment. So,
all right. I put it off long enough.
Gotta
now,
do it?
I gotta do it. I gotta do it. Now, due to the fact that, with this show, it's obvious that we've made fair mentions of who our teams are. And, you know, I believe at one point, either last season, where, you know, you went in on your squad, I got to go in on mine. My bad is Arsenal, and specifically Arsenal's second half and their defense. I have this game against Watford, where I believe it was expected that Watford would play with a bit of spirit, bringing back Kike and having a home game, trying to dig out of the 20 slot in the Premier League. You had to expect them to play with some sort of spirit. And even then, I've never seen them look that poor, ever. And I watched them – I mean, I actually watched live the game where they were up 4-0 on Newcastle and ended up drawing that game. This was – their second half was utterly appalling. The first half wasn't that great in respects anyway. They happened to get two goals from one of two players who I think is actually earning their money right now. And the rest of the squad really looked like they were signed yesterday and were unsure of what position they were supposed to play, what tactics they were supposed to be running, and what to do when they didn't have the ball. I saw the balls bouncing multiple times before a player would field it. You see passes that were to no one. You saw players passing the balls in their defensive third while being pressed with no actual support coming from the midfield. You're giving away goals, and the fact that your captain on the field, Granit Xhaka, actually said after the game that they were lucky to get away with the draw after going up 2-0. Let me read some stats that really highlight Arsenal's season, especially when it comes to the way they've played. Arsenal have made a combined 14 errors leading to opposition goals in the last year. 14 leads the Premier League. That's more than Chelsea, Manchester City, and Liverpool combined, plus 3 goals. Arsenal have the highest number of errors leading to shots. Their total of 33 is almost double that of Newcastle. No side has conceded more goals from penalties since the start of last season. They've given away penalties each of their last 3 games. Arsenal allowed 31 shots to Watford. 31 shots against a team that is struggling to score goals. Arsenal had 7 shots the entire game. 7 shots. They've only scored 8 goals this season, and 5 are from one player. Bert Leno had 8 saves in the game. He had 8 saves against the bottom of the table team. I'm sorry. And what makes it even worse is a win would have put them in third place. So if they could have just kept from screwing up, they would be in third place right now. I am at a loss. I saw other Arsenal fans, people that I know. We can't even talk to each other. We just looked at each other. Did you watch the game? I said, I think so. I watched something. I don't know what that was. I don't know what that was. Aubameyang said, I feel like we're just giving away goals. Right. They're just giving away goals. It is amazing that a team that even after all that, even after as bad as they look, they're still in seventh. Okay, they're only 1 point out of third place because there is a logjam and on 8 points between third through eighth place. There's a logjam on 8 points. It's, yes, Arsenal has a history of not capitalizing on great opportunities. They had the best opportunity this week to get into third place. They could be on 10 points, could be on 10 points. Playing against the bottom of the table team, not only do you go up too low, but you just looked Like, you looked like you had no idea what you were supposed to do. And the coach was at a complete loss for words after the game. I mean, I'm not saying that Unai Emery is the easiest to understand. He has a pretty heavy accent, but his English is good. I couldn't understand what he was saying afterwards. I don't think he even knew what was going on. They better turn it around, and they better turn it around quick. Hopefully their Europa League game against who are they playing? They're playing against Eintracht can do something better for them, because as of right now, I don't know what they're gonna do. I don't know.
I'm just gonna let you go in on them.
Okay.
You know,
I mean,
we excuse me. We identified the defense as a potential frailty.
Yes.
We said before that it was going to be a situation from the word go where they were going to rely heavily on their ability to score more goals than the opposition did.
Mm-hmm.
And that defense, with the players that were in, and even with the signing of David Luiz, who he's a great attacking center back, but he's not all, he's good for some errors at the back.
Mm-hmm.
And the defense is the weak link in Arsenal, and that's the way it has. And it's just, again, it's clear to me with this, and they're not alone in this respect, that, you know, they're not the fully formed circle yet. I feel like there are really three teams in Liverpool, City, and that are as close to complete as you can get. And then you have the gang of the rest. Now, the season hasn't nearly shaped up the way that I thought it was going to, but in Chelsea, in Arsenal, and in Man United, you have teams that are in various states of reorganization, disorganization. And that's where your competition is. That's who you're going to, and it's going to be who doesn't make, who makes the fewest amount of mistakes when it counts the most.
Right. Okay. So, but you know, you bring back Rob Holding, you bring back Hector Bellerin, you maybe try to give Callum Chambers a run, but it's, they don't know what to do. And, you know, our good buddy Will was pointing out that, David Luiz was starting to just play the ball out of the back and giving a long ball. And it was primarily because the tactics that they were doing of trying to play the ball out the back with possession, they weren't working. They were not working at all. And I actually don't think David Luiz had that bad of a game. He made a critical error giving up the penalty kick. It was a very obvious penalty. And to be honest with you, if David Luiz didn't give up that penalty, I really think that he's number 23. He would have had a clear shot on goal, or 31, I'm not sure. He would have had a clear shot on goal and could have scored that round anyway. So I don't necessarily think the penalty kick is what lost it for them. But for a while there, it looked like Luiz was the only one who was playing defense. It just, he looked like he was really by himself. I felt bad for him. There were some grumblings. People were like, oh, Luis is terrible, blah, 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 blah. I actually don't think he had that bad of a game. But there were a couple of players playing right back. I think it was Maitland-Niles was playing right back. He didn't know where he was supposed to be. And it just – and Matteo Guendouzi, he gets dribbled past way too often. He just kind of gets left behind. But it may be because he's lacking support from the defense and he's trying to do too much. So you had Pepe in the backs winning the ball in the defensive third. He was trying to do too much. He was trying to figure out a way to get the ball to Aubameyang. But it looked like they were just signed last week, and they said, okay, go try to do something and don't screw it up. But that was sad. But what's frustrating is that this was pointed out, as you said, extensively during the transfer market. Extensively at the end of last season, extensively during last season, that the defense is going to cost this team. And, you know, we can't sit here and beat up on Mesut Ozil. It's not Mesut Ozil. They're unable to get out of their own way. and they are going to, I mean, I fear that this is going to continue. And you're seeing that other teams are just going to pay attention to when Arsenal does play the ball out of the back, and they're going to start pressing really, really, really high. We're lucky we're playing Aston Villa this week. That's all I'm saying.
I think my other thing with that is I'm all for squad rotation.
Mm-hmm.
But I question the squad rotation. I question the changing in formations. Why did he change his formation for this
game? I don't know. I wonder the same thing.
You know,
I have no idea.
Was it an effort to see how to best fit Pepe in with Aubameyang?
Well, with Lacazette being injured, I can see that being just a logical switch. It's just putting Pepe where you would put Lacazette.
You could play Pepe on the wing.
You could start Reece Nelson. You can put Reece Nelson up there. He can play up the top.
And is Kieran Tierney injured and I don't know about it?
Yes, he has a groin issue.
Okay. And I was wondering why I had yet to see him, who was, you know, somebody who I...
Center backs. You can't solve a center back problem by signing David Luiz. You just can't.
No.
Mm-mm. So, but, you know, we'll see what happens when Rob Holding comes back. We'll see what happens with Hector Bellerin comes back. Hector Bellerin, though, I don't know. I fear he has a little bit of Jordan Reed in him, where I don't trust that he's going to be able to stay healthy.
We've seen that a lot with Arsenal players in the past.
Yes, exactly.
It was a curious outcome for them this week. But,
all right, I'm done. Yeah. I'm done. That's my bad. That's really, really, really bad. And I at least I'm glad that the players are genuinely embarrassed by that performance, because they should be.
So, I want to get on to one quick ugly before we get into previewing Europe this week. And thank you, Champions League gods, for throwing us a great welcome to the Champions League week. There's some really good matchups this week.
There's some really good matchups.
And this one will lead right into it, kind of. Neymar made his season debut for his home season debut this week for PSG. And on the field, it went, I guess, as well as you could expect it to. That they beat Strasbourg 1-0.
Mm-hmm.
He had a overhead kick in the second minute of second half injury time.
Mm-hmm.
But it did not go well for him in the stands. And by that, I mean he was jeered every time he touched the ball. His was booed. You know, there's clearly a dislike, distrust between him and the fans. Some of the banners that were unfurled were saying that they were critical, would be putting it nicely. I mean, one made reference to his father selling him to a brothel.
Wow.
Yeah. And the club had said to the fans that they weren't going to do this, and they didn't want him to get on him. They wanted him to kind of just, you know, leave him alone. And the fans clearly didn't care. And it's just, again, the saga is ugly. It is unfortunate, because here is a player who is immensely talented, but has burnt bridges, salted the earth behind him. And even watching the highlights, because I didn't watch the game, I just watched the highlights. He again played as if to say, I've got to do it all myself. Now, you know, one of the reasons why Mbappe's injured, he was playing with, it was basically the only other real attack. You had a Choupo Moting as your starting center forward. And then, of course, Angel Di Maria. And it wasn't exactly the deepest team. So maybe he did feel like he needed to do it all himself.
Right.
But just watching him dribble and try and pull off the spectacular at the expense of possibly creating something for a teammate just again made him look – was all the negative attributes of Neymar. And you could see the frustration with the fans to the point where they didn't even really cheer him after he scored the goal. Now, they have a massive game this week against Real Madrid, one that they will be going into without Mbappe, who's injured, without Cavani, who's not injured, and without Neymar, who will miss the first three Champions League matches because of his actions last year after the Manchester United game and his criticism of the ref.
I forgot about that. That's right.
So given
that could get really ugly.
And then given his injury history and his tendency to not play after the new year, could you see a situation where he only maybe potentially plays in three Champions League games for PSG if he plays at all?
Sadly, yeah. I mean, in looking at, but when you look at their group, they can conceivably not get out of Group A. Like they could be in Europa League by the end of the group stage. You know, you have two teams that are champions of their countries who have your history in Europe, and they're especially I'm thinking Galatasaray. That is not an easy place to play. Going to Istanbul.
Welcome to hell.
Yeah. And granted, Arsenal seems to be mostly I don't know why they always seem to get drawn with Fenerbahce when they were in Champions League. But yeah, it is not fun going there. So yeah, I agree. I don't think that's that far fetched of a thought to think he can play just solely three Champions League games for PSG and that'll be about it. And then I could see them going to Europa League and him going, I'm not playing in the Europa League. My back hurts.
Or just him getting, you know, the lot. He has never, again, in 2 years, he has never played a knockout round game for PSG. Your 220 million euro player has never played in the knockout rounds.
The
most important competition, club competition in Europe.
In the world, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
But while we're on the subject, you know, we talked about
it. He's got some bad advice.
You know, this trying to force his exit from PSG the way he did was just.
You can make
the comparison between him and Pogba, but the difference is, you know, I think that the Man United fans, at least initially, embraced Paul Pogba, but the kind of mercurialness of his performances sort of got them soured on him again. He left once, came back. Okay, it was great. He made all the right noise. I don't think that there's the same sort of emotional investment between Man United fans and Paul Pogba, number one. Two, even though he made all the noise about wanting to go out to Real Madrid, what did he still showed up.
Yeah.
And played.
And has played well.
Whereas Neymar reportedly offered to pay 20 million euros out of his own pocket to facilitate the move to Barcelona. He wanted to get out of there so bad. And yes, I do think he got some really bad advice going there and it's buyer's remorse. But instead of handling it the proper way, which is to say, okay, I'm here, I'm going to make the best of the situation.
Yep. Pay my contract. And then, you know, the first chance I have that I can leave peacefully, then I go.
Yeah, or let your agent do it, who just happens to be his father, do it behind the scenes.
Right.
Fine. But it just seems like he just has made a hash out of everything that could be made. And if there's a decision to be made, you can count on Neymar to make the wrong one right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that completely. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You can count on him to make the wrong choice right now. Yes. Whatever his gut's telling him to do, he needs to do the exact opposite.
As I like to tell my students, if you're thinking about doing it, it's probably wrong.
Yeah.
So that's my
– getting up ugly for both of us. I can't think of a situation right now that's uglier than that. Yeah.
No, not for an individual player. I mean, you do – I do want to get on to Europe. You know, this slate of games, I'm trying to think of a slate of games, especially a first slate of games, a first set of matchups, that's got as many potentially great games as this one does. Just tomorrow alone, you've got Benfica and RB Leipzig, which should be good. Napoli and Liverpool. And then perhaps the best one, maybe even possibly the game of the round, Dortmund and Barcelona. And, you know, Messi's back in training, but Barcelona's going to go in at well less than full strength in a very tough group.
And Dortmund's playing well. They're at their top table, even though they played limited games. Their top table is sitting right now.
And they just
in the Bundesliga.
Walloped Leverkusen this week.
Absolutely.
For nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like, that's a one of those teams, Barcelona, who at or near the, you know, presumptive champions of La Liga, Dortmund's leading currently the Bundesliga, and Inter Milan is currently leading Serie A.
And they look good. I actually watched a big chunk of their game against Udinese this weekend. And, yeah, they're looking pretty good.
And one of those three teams is going to the Europa League.
And nobody in Europa League wants to see any of those three teams.
I don't think anybody in the Europa League – I would figure – any one of those three teams would have to be at or near the top. I think probably you would give, you know, you would say if you had to make a choice between one of the three, say Inter, because they're the least experienced of them.
Right.
But, yeah, that's – and Slavia Prague aren't any pushovers. Like,
no.
Clearly they're going to just have a good time with this.
Right.
But they're going to make things awkward.
That's the team you don't want to play. You don't want to play that team when you need those points, and then you got to play against a team that's just like, let's have a kick about. Let's see what happens.
So, and then, of course, on Wednesday, you have
– there's huge games on Wednesday.
Yeah, again, PSG, Real Madrid, Atletico, Juventus. Like, does it get any better than that?
So, and Juventus is loaded this year. They're really loaded. I mean, they're
Juventus is loaded, but they had a big slip and a goalless draw this weekend.
I get the sense they're trying to get that Champions League, because that's been the one trophy that they haven't really been too successful in receiving. They'll win the Serie A. What is it? The Scudetto. They'll win that 10 times out of 10. Champions League hasn't been something that they've been able to win. They've won a few times, but I see them getting that depth to really be able to go for this title.
Well, all the money that was invested this summer in bringing in the likes of Aaron Ramsey and Matthijs de Ligt and to that team was with the sole purpose of them winning the Champions League. You know, again, you have maybe a year or two of peak Cristiano Ronaldo, but this team is set up to win the Champions League. That is what Sarri was brought in to do, was to win the Champions League. I think they will forego, and they probably were a little bit more focused on Atletico Madrid than they were on this weekend. But they got to go to Metropolitano play Diego Simeone's team, who, you know, quietly doing pretty well in La Liga. You know, how he keeps replacing the players that he loses is beyond me. But, you know, you get rid of Griezmann and you bring in João Felix.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I'm just jumping on, though, that the even then, though, you have the Olympiakos Spurs game on Wednesday at Olympiakos. Olympiakos had an off year last year because they didn't actually win the Greek Super League. That's not an easy game either. You're right. The slate of games that we have kicking off this year are actually – they're pretty exciting. So – I got to get my stream on.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully,
and it'll be the final one. It's going to be nice to see Atalanta, the little club, the little Italian club that could.
Yep. And Dinamo Zagreb, that's another one of those places. Their ultras are pretty. They're pretty wild over there.
That's going to be an interesting one. Of course, you have both Manchester United and Manchester United, Celtic, and Arsenal all in action
mm-hmm.
on Thursday
mm-hmm.
in the group stages of the Champions League. I'm pretty sure that Manchester United's group, the only continent that they're not going to visit in the course of this group, there is Antarctica.
Yeah, for real. But don't forget, though, I'm wondering what's going to happen. I'm glad we've gone into Europa League because I'd like to spend a second to talk about Wolves.
Mm.
They have not had that great of a start, but it's weird. They've had kind of the quietest bad start to the league for a team that did as well as they did last year. It's not that they've dropped their last two and they drew their first three, but they were all playing against some pretty challenging teams. So you're looking at they started the Premier League and they where is it? Here we go. So they drew with Leicester. And then who's Leicester sitting in, what, fourth right now? Fourth or fifth? Yeah.
Fifth. They're behind Man United on goal difference, I believe.
Right. Then they drew with drew with Manchester United, and then drew with Burnley. That was a bad draw, the Burnley game. But they end up winning their Europa League playoff to get into the group stage. And they won that pretty handily, but with an aggregate score of 5-3. And then they had a bad red card and that bad loss to Everton at Everton. And then, of course, they run into a buzzsaw of someone we should talk about very briefly. I want to give him a special shout-out in Chelsea. So they haven't had the easiest go, but I don't think anyone was expecting after last season, after five games in the Premier League, they would be sitting in 19th place. That's a little shocking. It's a little shocking.
Nuno... And this goes back to what we were talking about with Fart.
Mm-hmm.
The shine can come off very, very, very quickly.
Right.
And while we don't anticipate it, should this go on much longer, you know, the chair, I'm not saying that it's going to get hot, but it's definitely, if it's not already warming up,
it's starting to.
Switch has been flipped.
Yeah. Well, but let's say they have a group they can get out of.
Mm-hmm.
So they have Besiktas in Turkey, and then you have the Bratislava and Braga. You know, you have teams that they like. Wolves can beat those teams. So what if they get this pretty? Because you know, I'm thinking I don't want to compare them to Burnley, who had a pretty good season. And got to Europa League qualifications, and then like crapped out immediately. And I'm mm-hmm. sure, but then they ended up struggling to stay up last season. I don't want to equate Wolves to them because I feel like Wolves are a much better team. But if let's say they get a win in their opening League Cup game, opening Europa League game, excuse me, and then they go into Crystal Palace and they win at Crystal Palace. That could change the whole outlook for the next couple of weeks, I'd say, and hopefully cool that seat down for Uncle Nuno. Because if not, then I think, you're going to really be feeling it because you're sitting there going, okay, this is a small club. Are they going to get overly stretched trying to play Europa League and try to compete in the Premier League to try to stay up? And they're still alive in the League Cup. They haven't started the FA Cup yet. So – Is this going to be too much for that squad? They did bring in some more players, but
they did. But that was the thing; they invested in the side for success based
for
on
success.
Last year's
exactly.
team.
Exactly.
And right now,
so you can't go
not
crap out now. Yeah, you can't do that now. You can't. And I'm pulling for them really, really, really hard in Europa League. I really would like to see them do well. I mean, it's great to see a team that was in the championship 2 years ago competing in Europe. And getting to the group stage, for that matter. So it's, but you know, I feel like it's, the seat shouldn't be too hot simply because they're playing against really quality opponents and they've gotten draws. They haven't been able to get a win. And I think just one win out of that first three with Leicester, Man United, and Burnley really would have gone a long way. Because, you know, you say what you want. Everton's always going to be a good team. Playing at Everton's always going to be challenging. So at least you can kind of give him a little bit of a pass there, a little bit of a pass.
I just think that those were games that they were able to pick up wins in last year.
Exactly.
And that they're not getting.
Exactly. Especially that Burnley game. That's a game they would have won last year.
And we got to say, you know, where are they? What's the mentality? And have they figured it out? What buttons? And that's the thing. When you're a manager and you've got a team and you find success, what do you keep doing? Because once you start to find success, they start paying attention. And teams start figuring out how to play against you.
Yeah, they start watching more of your team.
Yeah, and you've got to keep up with the times. And how Nuno adjusts is going to determine whether he's the next big thing and he's moving on to bigger and better things, or he's a one-hit wonder, and we're talking about Uncle Nuno driving a bus again next year.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Well, I'm pulling for him. I hope he's able to figure this out because I like having him around.
So you hinted at Chelsea. So as we get ready to wrap it up, I guess we got to talk about the buzzsaw that was Tammy Abraham with
absolutely
I don't even know what to call it. It's not the Gordie Howe hat trick.
I don't either.
Because he's got the hat trick. He got the own goal.
Yeah.
He got the assist, and he got the yellow card.
Yeah. And he got a leg cramp. And had to get subbed out.
So you get the hat trick, you get the own goal. In a 7-goal game, he scored 4 of them.
Yeah.
You get the assist.
He's only played 3 games this year, and he's sitting on 7 goals.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. He still has not committed to playing for England.
Is he still talking about – he's Nigerian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's still leaving that door open. He has not committed to say that he's played for England.
Interesting.
And we know,
I think, I'm sure if he's sitting there thinking like, well, I'm not going to play for England if I'm not going to play.
I'm not going to play for England if I'm not going to play, but he's
on the
not
bench.
Old. And it's not like England has a ton of striking options behind Harry Kane. You know, Gareth Southgate has already said that he fancies Marcus Rashford more as a winger than a number 9. So that path is clear. It's just an interesting development.
Yeah, very interesting. I mean, and I think hopefully doesn't pay too much attention to Aubameyang, who said, you know, no, I'm going to go play for Gabon, and who may not be able to play as far as in big tournaments outside maybe the Africa Cup of Nations, but hey, he's their captain, he's their all-time leading scorer, and he seems to really enjoy playing for that country. So, granted, Gabon is pretty small, and it doesn't have the competition of a country like Nigeria. Because I also am wondering, playing for Nigeria, we all see that, you know, like, are they shipping crates of cash to meet their players so they can play? Maybe that was Cameroon or something. So, all was not well in the FA for quite a few of these. It's just sad. I mean, we spoke about this before, but quite a few of these African countries. But yeah, it'd be interesting. I'm wondering what he'll do. I'm sure he'll end up playing for England. I think that would be the safest choice, but.
Hey, look, Leon Bailey ended up playing for Jamaica after all.
That's true.
So stranger things have happened. All right, well, we got to hit out once again for I'd like to thank our sponsor, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. Thanks to producer Paul for keeping us on track and keeping the trains running on time. Thank you, Stead,
Absolutely.
For keeping it, making it Two Guys Soccer Show. And we did all right this week, and we'll try and do better next week.